Now move to question time, and I call Senator O'Sullivan.
Thank you. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong, and relates to the High Court's ruling on immigration detention. This morning, the Australian newspaper reported that one of the individuals released from immigration detention following the High Court's ruling last week is, quote, a violent sex predator with a record of attacking elderly women in their own homes, so chilling a judge branded him a danger to the Australian community. Today, the Guardian newspaper reported one of the detainees who was released was convicted of two counts of rape and one of sexual assault. The Guardian reports the offence occurred at the victim's workplace when he, quote, held the victim up against a shelf in a blind spot without cameras in a retail store about 4 p.m. on a Thursday afternoon. Last night, the Australian newspaper reported that one of those released was a person who was convicted of abducting a 28-year-old woman and, quote, fatally shooting her in a forest on the outskirts of Kuala Lumpur and blowing up her body with military-grade explosives. What other type of offences were committed by those who have now been released?
Thank you, Senator O'Sullivan. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. I thank the senator for his question. And I would make the point that the individuals who have now been released as a result of a High Court decision that the government took a different view on in terms of the submissions. We obviously expressed a different view. Those persons were obviously in detention at the time, and no action was taken by those opposite to remove them from Australia. And of course, the Leader of the Opposition was the Minister for Home Affairs at that time. So I would make this point to the Opposition that...
Order.
Well, you tell me, why couldn't they be? That's a very... I'll take that intervention. Maybe you should ask Mr Dutton that. Why could they not be removed from Australia? He didn't choose to take those steps. What I would say is I understand that Senator... Sorry, that... Claire Ms O'Neill and Mr Giles have today released a further statement in relation to community safety. We have ensured that ABF officials have briefed local, state and territory police on the possible implications of the case. That was prior to the court's final hearing. Immediately following the AFP Commissioner briefed in person the Police Commissioner of every state and territory the outcome of the High Court's decision, including the expected number of individuals likely to be released by the High Court in each jurisdiction. On the 10th of November, Operation Aegis, which is a joint ABF, Australian Border Force and Australian Federal Police operation, was established, which is managing the overall response of federal agencies and state and territory police. This operation was established before any person except
the plaintiff
had been.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator O'Sullivan, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. I refer to the Leader of the Government's failure to answer a question from Senator Cash yesterday relating to the High Court ruling on indefinite detention. What are the consequences if one of the 80 people so far released under the High Court's orders violate the visa conditions the government has imposed on them? Can they be detained for breaching those orders? Those conditions.
Thank you, Senator O'Sullivan. Minister Wong.
As we have made clear, individuals required to be released by the High Court as a result of this decision have been subject to a range of strict and mandatory visa conditions. These conditions will include restricting the types of employment. Well, I would like to invite you, if you'd like to make a submission, make a contribution about what you would do faced with this High Court decision, bearing in mind that these people were in detention on your watch and no resettlement, removal from Australia was arranged. Such conditions will include or can include the restriction of types of employment requiring regular reporting to authorities and requiring released detainees to report their personal detail, including social media profiles, which are being actively monitored. In addition, the government has imposed daily reporting requirements for those with the most serious criminal history. This is in addition to any reporting requirements or orders imposed by state,
Minister,
federal, or territory laws.
Senator O'Sullivan, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Through you, Minister, your government has moved with lightning speed to release these individuals in advance of the High Court's reasons. Australia now need to live with this risk. but the community still has no idea what you're going to do to protect them. Why can't you tell us what concrete steps you are taking? Why are you so quick to release these detainees, but so slow to protect Australians?
Thank you, Senator O'Sullivan, Minister.
Well, I noticed that the former, the Shadow Attorney General says says what a great question. Are you seriously saying? Is it really the opposition saying that they ought not comply with the decision of the High Court of Australia?
Senator McKenzie.
Are you seriously? The senator says lightning speed. We are required, as you would have been. You would have been required to release as well, because there is no constitutional basis. There is no constitutional basis for their detention.
Order.
There is no constitutional basis for their detention. So a suggestion, a criticism about a move at lightning speed. A suggestion that they are being released at lightning speed is a suggestion that the government ought not comply
Senator Cash.
Law. The Constitution. This is a constitutional democracy. Whether
we
like the decision of the High Court
has
or
expired.
Not.
Thank you, Minister Wong. Senator Green.
My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Health, Senator Gallagher. Minister, during the election campaign, Labor committed to opening 50 Medicare urgent care clinics across Australia. With these urgent care clinics now being opened across the country, including yesterday, a new Gold Coast clinic, could the minister please update the Senate on how many clinics have been opened across the country, how many people are using the centres, and any examples of how these Medicare urgent care clinics are helping Australian families access urgent care when they need it?
Thank you, Senator Green. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Green for that excellent question about Medicare urgent care clinics. And how they are being rolled out across the country. I thank Senator Green for the question. I will update the Chamber to let them know that there are now 37 Medicare urgent care clinics now open, including the Gold Coast Medicare Urgent Care Clinic,
Great.
Which opened yesterday.
Excellent place.
This is part of our commitment to roll out 58 urgent care clinics right around Australia. And the aim of these clinics are to make it easier for people to get the treatment they need, healthcare treatment they need, from highly qualified health staff at a convenient and accessible way through these urgent care clinics. They are designed to take pressure off the emergency departments, which all of us know are under extreme pressure at the moment, with particularly with spring illnesses and things like that, but also to ensure that healthcare across Australia remains convenient and accessible through extended hours, 7 days a week, fully bulk billed or free of charge consultations. And in just the months since these clinics have been opening around the country, there have been more than 60,000 presentations to Medicare urgent care clinics. That's 60,000 presentations that either wouldn't have been seen or would have had to have long waits in the emergency department. One of those patients, and I'm sure Senator Rustin will be pleased with this because it's about a patient who attended a Medicare urgent care clinic in Elizabeth, South Australia. He arrived at the urgent care clinic at 5:30 p.m. He was triaged by a nurse within 3 minutes and seen by a doctor within 11 minutes. And he left the urgent care clinic at 6:02, just half an hour after he presented with what would have been a Category 5 presentation and would have expected a long wait at treatment in an emergency department.
Thank you, Minister. Order across the chamber. Senator Green, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, the urgent care clinics is a new model of care being introduced to Australia. Why does the government consider it important to explore new approaches to the health service delivery? And how do urgent care clinics complement other steps the government is taking to strengthen Medicare?
Thank you, Senator Green. Minister Gallagher.
Well, the manager of opposition business said, so what, about one of her constituents being able to be seen, treated and discharged within half an hour of presenting at the Elizabeth Urgent Care Clinic.
Order.
And I think that sums up everything that we already knew about the opposition. We know that they haven't seen a Medicare item they don't want to slash. They haven't seen
a primary care budget that they wanted to put a GP tax on. Remember that?
Order. Well, this government is different. We are big supporters of Medicare. We invest in Medicare, and it is a new model of care, despite what those opposite are shouting. And it is targeted to low acuity, out-of-hours care for Australians who might otherwise have a long wait in an emergency department. Now, we know nearly a third of the patients being seen by urgent care clinics have been under 15 years of age. Nearly a third have visits on the weekend, and on weekdays more than one in five have taken place after 6 o'clock.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Green, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, one of the aims of opening Medicare urgent care clinics is to help ease the pressure on busy emergency departments across the country. This is yet another example of how the government is working for Australians while the opposition continues to provide no solutions. Why is this important, and what policies have previous governments implemented to address these challenges?
Thank you, Senator Green. Minister Gallagher.
I thank Senator Green for that question. And one of the big differences between the former government and ours is we want to work with states and territories to deal with and support the work that they do across the health system through their primary responsibility of the hospital-led care and how the primary care system works. We work with them. We cooperate with them, and we are happy to partner with them to make sure that Australians get access to the best type of health care in the most convenient and affordable way possible. That is what urgent care clinics do, and that's why you're all so quiet now, because you know they are very popular and they're delivering exactly what we set out to do. And it is in stark contrast, of course, to the approach taken by those opposite. We remember it was in Mr Dutton's days as a health minister, remember the worst health minister in the country, I think he was voted, when he cut $200 million on a national partnership in public hospital services that was explicitly there to reduce emergency department wait. You cut, we invest.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Fawcett.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. Minister, yesterday you declined to answer whether the Prime Minister had spoken with representatives of Australia's Jewish community since the threatening events that occurred targeting their communities in Melbourne and Sydney over the weekend. I ask the question again, has the Prime Minister spoken to representatives of Australia's Jewish community regarding those events?
Minister Wong.
I can indicate that I have. And I can indicate to you, Senator Fawcett, and I will take on notice of whether or not the Prime Minister has had engagement since the weekend. But I would say to you, it is the case that Australia's Jewish community are deeply distressed. As I said this morning, there is a history, obviously, to the persecution of the Jewish people. And the October 7 attacks by Hamas was the single a day on which more Jewish lives were lost in a single day than in any day against, since the Holocaust. So that of itself is traumatising. And since then we have seen a rise in prejudice and hate. We've seen anti-Semitism on the rise. I would also say we have seen Islamophobia and other forms of prejudice also on the rise, well, hence my comments this morning about division. I think it is important to affirm in this place that we all stand against those forms of hatred. We all stand against anti-Semitism. And I would also repeat the comments I made, which day are we? 2 days ago on Insiders. Australians have a right to feel and be safe. Australia's Jewish community has a right to feel and be safe. As the Prime Minister has said as well, we are the protest or the events in Caulfield was the wrong thing to do, and I think other events have been intimidating. I do understand why it is people feel distressed, and we need to affirm
Thank you, Minister.
Our support.
Senator
Fawcett,
first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. You've just said that all Australians, including Australia's Jewish community, have a right to feel and be safe. They are expressing fears about displaying religious symbols, wearing religious garments, or even wearing Jewish school uniforms in public. So what specific measures has the federal government taken to alleviate these concerns, and has the Prime Minister spoken to state and territory premiers and leaders to coordinate measures to support Australia's Jewish community?
Minister Wong.
Thank you. In part, this is a legal framework question, which is, you know, obviously both federal legislation, including the Racial Discrimination Act, Section 18C, which had a history of in this place, but also it is an issue of state and territory laws and police and policing conduct. What I would also say, though, is part of how we affirm people's right to feel and be safe is also how we behave and what we say and do. And you know, I acknowledge, despite our many political differences and his occasional criticism of me, the Leader of the Opposition in this place and the whole opposition that supported a bipartisan motion. I think that was very important.
Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Fawcett.
Just a point of order. The question was specifically, has the Prime Minister engaged with premiers and leaders of the territories to coordinate actions to support our Jewish communities?
I believe the Minister is being relevant. Minister, we're at zero. Sorry, Senator Fawcett. Senator Fawcett, second supplementary.
Thank you. Minister, the Prime Minister didn't convene a National Security Committee meeting immediately following the 7th of October terrorist attack by Hamas on innocent civilians in Israel. Will he now convene a meeting of National Cabinet to address the concerns of Australia's Jewish community about their safety and to secure a joint statement of all of Australian heads of government against anti-Semitism and in support of the rights of Australians in our Jewish community?
Thank you, Senator Fawcett. Minister.
Well, I would make the point the government has made commitments which go to social cohesion in a very short period after the attacks, including grant or funds to the Executive Council of Australian Jewry and to similar funds to other communities affected, both in terms of support, security. There was also funding for targeted mental health and community support and wellbeing support, as well as I said, security measures. There was also funding for the protection of Australians from terrorist and violent extremist content online. So I would say to the Senator, we are open to discussions about how we can continue to support.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Faruqi.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Housing today, Senator Gallagher. Australia is in a rental and housing crisis, and research released today confirms that yet again, loudly and clearly. A person on JobSeeker with a mere $22,000 in income is forced to spend at least 78% of their income to rent a one-bedroom apartment in any capital city, and 100% of their income on rent in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, and Canberra. Many areas across the country are the most unaffordable they've ever been, with rent becoming 13% less affordable in Sydney and 10% less affordable in Melbourne and Perth this year. In cities and regions, more families are living in tents, more people are forced to live in their cars after applying for hundreds of rental properties. Minister, will you finally act and coordinate a freeze on rental increases?
Thank you, Senator Faruqi. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Faruqi for the question, and I saw that report released today, and I think it confirms what a lot of all of us know, is that for a lot of people across Australia who are doing it tough right now, including in finding rental places to live and to afford the rents that are being asked for, which is why, precisely why, the government increased
the largest increase into the Commonwealth rent assistance in the last 30 years, in the last budget, why we increased and adjusted payments for those on JobSeeker and other payments, including parenting payments single, considerably in light of the pressure that people are under. I would say that there is a very significant piece of work underway through National Cabinet where the Prime Minister has shown the leadership that's required to work with all of the states and territories to improve rights for renters, and there's quite a significant reform agenda there. I would also point out that there isn't one jurisdiction in the country, and I don't believe there is any leader of any jurisdiction in the country that believes a rent freeze is actually the way to go. And the focus, but we do accept that we need to look at and address rights for renters, which is why that agenda is being led through National Cabinet and was the outcomes of which were announced, I think, at their last meeting. But in terms of the dealing with the underlying issue here, which is supply, talk to anybody in the industry, whether it be in the community sector, whether it be in the housing sector, whether it be in the construction sector, the issue here is supply. And as senators know, we have an extremely ambitious agenda around generating supply of housing across the country.
Senator Faruqi, first.
Thank you, President. Minister, while thousands of Australians are struggling to afford to keep a roof over their heads, why is Labor's position that rents should go up indefinitely?
Thank you, Senator Faruqi. Minister Gallagher.
It's not Labor's position. That is you asserting that that is Labor's position, but that is not Labor's position. And as have I said, no state or territory supports rent freezes. That is the position. Nor do experts in the housing market, including National Shelter. None of them support a rental freeze. Our policies are around boosting supply of all housing to make it easier to buy or rent. An independent analysis of our supply plan by the Grattan Institute found that it could put significant downward pressure on rents, saving renters billions over the next decade. So our agenda, whether it be the National Housing Accord, the Social Housing Accelerator, the New Homes Bonus, the Housing Support Program, the National Planning Reform Blueprint, the Housing Australia Future Fund, the National Housing Infrastructure Facility. I think we have shown in the last 18 months that we are addressing the housing shortage in this country.
Expired. Senator Faruqi, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, over 80 housing organisations and the vast majority of people across the country called for national rent caps and strong national renters' rights. Will you stop listening to the industry? And why is the government ignoring the calls of housing experts and the Australian public to implement a freeze and a cap on rental increases?
Thank you, Senator Faruqi. Minister Gallagher.
I refer you to my previous answer, but I would say there is something constructive the Greens political party could do on this area, and that is to stop running the campaigns they are in their own electorates against the supply and new supply of affordable housing. For example, the member for Griffith is campaigning against a plan to build an aged care facility in his electorate. Rather than allow 220 aged care patients to get treatment, he wants the space used as a park. The member for Ryan is campaigning against a plan to subdivide an old chicken farm into 91 new homes. Again, arguing against this development, and we even have the lead member for Melbourne, Adam Bant, also arguing against one of the new social housing accelerator programs in Carlton. That is an area, I think, where we could all work together to support the increase of supply of housing to put downward pressure on rents. That is something that this chamber could support.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Skills and Training. Upon the election, the Albanese government inherited a massive skills deficit holding our economy back. According to the OECD, Australia was experiencing the second most severe labour shortage in the developed world. So how is the Albanese government prioritising and rebuilding the vocational education and training sector after this decade of neglect?
Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Pratt, who, like so many on this side of the chamber, is a very strong supporter of training in our TAFE system. Upon the Albanese government's election last year, it was clear that we had not only inherited a $1 trillion debt from the Liberals and Nationals, and they really hate being reminded of that, but the opposition had also left behind a massive skills deficit. And there's one of the people responsible, Senator Cash, a former Minister for Skills and Training, who slashed TAFE in her years in office. Not having enough skilled workers is bad for businesses, it's bad for productivity, and it's bad for Australians who don't have access to the products and services they need, and Senator Cash is unrepentant for her cuts. Anyone who's tried to do home renos lately knows how hard it is to get a builder or a tiler or a sparky. I certainly know that myself. But butchers, hairdressers, IT specialists, ag and aged care workers, the list goes on of skills deficits left behind by the former government. And that's why the Albanese government took urgent action on being elected by funding 180,000 fee-free TAFE places in 2023 and more in future years. We brought together Australians, unions, employers and civil society at the Jobs and Skills Summit. We established Jobs and Skills Australia to underpin our response to current and emerging workforce needs, and we created new energy apprenticeships to get more workers into the clean energy sector. Our urgent actions are helping to address critical skills needs by expanding access to the vet sector and supporting quality training. That's good for Australians, it's good for businesses, and it's good for our economy. The vet sector can only work to its full potential if the Commonwealth and state and territory governments work together. And that's why I was so pleased last month to see the Albanese government announce an historic agreement with every state and territory to boost investment in the Australian vet sector over the next 5 years. Our government is prepared to invest $12.6 billion to expand and transform access to the vet sector. We're fixing up the mess.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, President. We know that fee-free TAFE is providing opportunities for Australians to skill and reskill in areas of demand without a financial burden. But not everyone supports fee-free TAFE. Minister, what has been the response to our fee-free TAFE policy in 2023?
Thank you, Minister. And I remind you, Minister, before you start, Minister, I remind you to direct your answers to the Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, President, for the reminder. In 2023, already over 214,000 Australians have enrolled in fee-free TAFE, smashing our target of 180,000 places 6 months earlier than anticipated. That tells you something about the amount of pent-up demand that there was in the training system after 10 years of coalition government and their cuts to the training sector. And importantly, these enrolments are in areas of high priority, and they are saving Australians money. Our fee-free TAFE places is one of the many steps the Albanese government is taking to assist Australians with cost of living pressures. In New South Wales, a student studying a Diploma of Early Childhood Education and Care could save almost $5,000 over the life of their course, while someone from Victoria studying a Diploma of Nursing could save over $15,000. But you'll be shocked to hear that not everyone supports fee-free TAFE, because while the Prime Minister continues to visit TAFEs around the country, the opposition leader still hasn't said the word TAFE in Parliament since 2004.
Thank you,
Peter
Minister.
Dutton is all about saying no, including to fee-free TAFE.
Senator Pratt, second supplementary.
Minister, the TAFE sector has endured periods of underfunding, impacts of deregulation, loose rules for market entry, a lack of national cohesion, and an obsession for competition at the expense of collaboration. How have the government's actions to strengthen TAFE been informed by these lessons of the past?
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Minister Watt.
Thank you again, Senator Pratt. Well, Senator Pratt, you might think, like I do, that it's common sense, but apparently it's news to those opposite that if you don't collaborate and coordinate with the states and territories who are responsible for huge amounts of investment in their own TAFE sectors, then it's impossible to get the best outcomes for Australians, businesses and the economy. That's what we experienced under the previous Liberal National Government. For the first time in 10 years, every state and territory has been supported by the Commonwealth in a genuine and collaborative way. Now, President, it does seem that there are a few opposition members who need to take up our fee-free TAFE places. And in fact, maybe we need to offer a course on how to become a shadow minister, because we know it's nearly been 6 months since Stuart Robert left the parliament, hasn't been replaced, and instead of actually filling that vacancy, instead of having a reshuffle, Peter Dutton just shuffles people up the deck chairs up along there on the other side. Maybe they should have a fee-free TAFE course on how to be a backbencher after the member for Monash resigned from the Liberal Party and went to the crossbench today.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator David Pocock.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Infrastructure Minister, Senator Watt. Minister, my question is about the government's new infrastructure policy statement, in particular the new requirement for an equal funding split. The statement says the Australian government's funding for nationally significant land transport infrastructure projects will be provided on a 50-50 basis with state and territory delivery partners. It goes on to say the government may consider funding a greater share of projects on the national land transport network in jurisdictions with less capacity to raise revenue on a case-by-case basis. Minister, clearly the ACT has a lower revenue-raising capacity. Can you guarantee that this new policy will not result in even less investment in the ACT?
Thank you, Senator Pocock. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Pocock, and thank you, President. As you've stated, Senator Pocock, today the Minister for Infrastructure, Ms King, has released the government's infrastructure, new infrastructure policy. And what it's about, more than anything, is about getting our infrastructure program into shape so it can actually be funded and so it can actually be delivered. And that's the case whether it be in the ACT, my home state of Queensland, or anywhere else. Because we did see, Senator Pocock, over 10 years of coalition government, massive blowouts of the infrastructure program, an infrastructure program that expanded from about 150 projects to 800 under the coalition, which of course could not have possibly been delivered, with a blowout to the infrastructure budget of $33 billion. Now, Senator Pocock, you have raised the question about what it means for the ACT, and as you've noted, Ms King has made that statement that there may be some provision for smaller jurisdictions which have funding constraints. Obviously, those kind of details will need to be worked through with those particular jurisdictions. And I'd be happy to talk with you further about that, Senator Pocock, as those details are ironed out. But we know it pains the National Party, and that's why they're complaining now, that all of a sudden all of those illusory projects that were never actually going to happen, but just look really good on a spreadsheet, especially if they are coloured National Party green, those sorts of projects were the flavour of the month, and in fact the decade for the National Party. But you know what? They were never going to be delivered. There was never the funding to deliver them, there were never the skills to deliver them, and now we have a government that's actually serious about delivering an infrastructure program, serious about investing in nationally significant infrastructure projects, whether they be in the ACT or anywhere else, rather than filling out spreadsheets with election commitments that could be made that were never, ever going to be delivered.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Pocock, first supplementary.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Minister. Minister King also said that this was the $120 billion can go further. Does this mean that it will apply retrospectively to projects already announced?
Minister.
Thank you, Senator Pocock. I'm not sure that that's what Ms King had in mind when she made that statement. Of course, that would be, well, newsflash, my name is not Catherine King. I can't predict exactly what is in her mind when she's making statements.
Order.
But what I would hazard a guess that what she meant by that, Senator Pocock, was that the move towards 50-50 funding, the move back towards the traditional 50-50 funding, would actually mean that states and
Senator
territories
Canavan.
In joining those projects could expand the value of those projects all up. So to give you an example from my state, the Commonwealth Government has committed $10 billion
Senator
in funding
McKenzie.
To the Bruce Highway. That funding remains in place. Under the old funding model, Queensland would have put in $2 billion to take it to a total of $12 billion. Now they would take it to $10 billion to a total value of $20 billion.
Senator McKenzie.
So I think what Ms King is talking about when she says that is that the Commonwealth's money can stretch further because it needs to be matched by the states and territories.
Thank you, Minister. Senator McKenzie, when I call you to order, that's what I want, not you to just continue to interject. Senator Pocock. Second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Minister, was the ACT government consulted in the development of this policy, and what impact will it have on current infrastructure funding commitments in the ACT, from light rail to road funding? And will any ACT projects be axed in the coming round of cuts?
Minister Watt.
Senator Pocock, I am aware that Ms King and her officials and quite possibly other members of our government have spoken to all states and territories in the preparation of these statements. And I think that if they're being honest, all states and territories recognise that there are serious capacity challenges with the delivery of an infrastructure program that was never able to be funded, that never had the skills and the supplies necessary to deliver it. So all governments, federal, state and territory, are having to take a look at their infrastructure program to see what can be funded in the current environment without fuelling inflation and to see what can actually be delivered rather than just being put onto a press release. In terms of the ACT, Senator Pocock, you're probably aware that in this year's budget, led capably, I might say, by the Senator for the ACT, Senator Gallagher, who's always standing up for the ACT, in this year's budget, the Australian government committed $476.4 million towards major infrastructure projects in the ACT over the 10 years from the 23-24. That funding remains in place.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Vann.
Thank you, President. My question is for the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Senator Wong. On October 7, Gaza erupted when the Hamas terror group rained terror on Israelis. Over 200 people were abducted by Hamas and other terror groups, and more than 1,200 killed. Can the Minister provide the Chamber with the latest and accurate statistics, specifically the number of individuals abducted by Hamas, the current status of those hostages, and the total number of fatalities resulting from the terrorist attacks?
Minister Wong.
Thank you, Senator Vann, for the question, and can I? And thank you for giving us a little bit of notice of some of the issues, so that I could get some further details. Obviously, in relation to the first part of the question, the United Nations has reported that 1,200 Israelis have been killed in the conflict since October 7. The vast majority of these Israelis were killed in the horrific events of 7 October, as I said, biggest loss of Jewish life on any day since the Holocaust. And of course, we condemn these terrorist acts unequivocally. They cannot and should not be justified. In relation to hostages, I understand that the IDF has stated that the number of hostages still held captive is approximately 240, and I again reiterate our call, along with the international community, for the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages. I'm advised that UN reports that more than 11,000 Palestinians have been killed in the conflict. This is a deeply distressing time for many in Australia, as we have talked about a number of times today. Distressing for our Jewish community, who lost loved ones in the abhorrent attacks by Hamas. Distressing for members of our Palestinian community who have lost loved ones in the conflict that has followed, and for many more who feel deeply about this issue. I again say we have our first priority in this crisis must be to seek to keep our country unified. It has also been to assist Australians abroad, and I have previously spoken in this chamber about the return, ensuring that repatriation flights were arranged. Australia will continue to work with other countries that have influence in the region to prevent the conflict from spreading.
Senator Vann, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Could you provide a comprehensive overview of Australia's humanitarian aid to Gaza, detailing the amount, delivery methods and organisations involved? Could you also confirm whether the International Red Cross has been granted access to the hostages and how our aid is being effectively utilised in the context of this conflict?
Thank you, Senator Vann. Minister Wong.
I describe the humanitarian situation in Gaza as dire and catastrophic, and human suffering in Gaza is widespread. We announced early on in this conflict an additional $25 million in humanitarian assistance through trusted partners to address essential needs in Gaza, Lebanon and Egypt. This includes $9 million through the ICRC, International Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement, $13 million to provide support through UN agencies such as UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund and the UN Population Fund, and $3 million to respond to emerging humanitarian needs as a result of the conflict. I've also engaged with the ICRC. We have engaged with the ICRC and other UN agencies, and the government is willing to consider further requests. Some 981 trucks with humanitarian aid have entered Gaza since the 21st of October. Prior to this conflict, an average of 500 trucks per working day entered Gaza,
Minister,
which shows the dire humanitarian
situation. Senator Vann, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Could you advise what efforts are being undertaken by the Australian intelligence agencies to investigate and identify any foreign interference that may be contributing to the increasing number of horrific anti-Semitic campaigns across our media?
Thank you, Senator Vann. Minister Wong.
Thank you. I would say first, obviously we don't comment on intelligence, but you would have seen public statements which have been made by some of our respected leaders in the intelligence community about the importance of social cohesion. And as I said earlier today, that we must all work to maintain respect for each other's humanity. We have seen a disturbing rise in anti-Semitism, and that must be called out. It is abhorrent, and it has no place in this country. There is no place for prejudice, anti-Semitism, and no place for Islamophobia in Australia. In response to Senator Fawcett, spoke about some of the support the government has given, including for security, as well as mental health support and other support for the communities, including the Jewish community and members of the Islamic community.
Oh, sorry, Minister, the time for answering has expired. Senator Vann, no, beg your pardon, sorry, Senator Lambie.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. Yesterday, Minister Burke, while blocking the four closing loopholes bills the Senate passed last week, accused the Senate, along with members in the other place, of playing, and I quote, delaying games, end quote. Meanwhile, he has put the bills to the bottom of the business paper, giving them the lowest priority. The minister, instead of putting his big boy pants on and taking ownership of these bills, has chosen to block the passage of bills that would give federal first responders easier access to PTSD diagnosis, stop discrimination in the workplace of victims of family and domestic violence, bring silica into line with asbestos, enable redundancy payments for workers of large businesses that are falsing insolvency. Minister, why won't this government recognise that these bills were your bills, and that they were good bills, and that they had great capacity to help some of the most vulnerable Australians that we have out there?
Thank you, Senator Lambie. Minister Watt.
Well, thank you, Senator Lambie. And I understand that in terms of the procedural steps that were taken in the House of Representatives yesterday, you might actually want to look at the opposition as to the tactics that were adopted by the opposition in the House of Representatives, which may explain why certain bills were listed where they were listed. But be that as it may, the point that we made last week, Senator Lambie, and the point that we have continued to make and will continue to make is that this government believes that it is important to do something about silicosis and asbestosis in the workplace, and of course Labor governments have got a very proud record in that regard. We also believe that it's important to deal with the issues around PTSD for first responders and all of the other things that were contained in those bills that you and Senator Pocock put forward last week. But you know what? It's also pretty important to do something about labour hire workers getting ripped off. It's also pretty important to do something about industrial manslaughter, where workers are killed at work because of the negligence of their workers. It's also pretty important to do something about the safety of delivery drivers and other gig workers who aren't dealt with, and none of these matters are dealt with, as you well know, in the bills that you put forward to the Senate last week. So we do think that it's important to deal with all of those issues that the two independent senators cherry-picked from our legislation last week, but we also think it's important to deal with all those other matters. And Senator Lambie, I think one of the most important things that you said last week, I think it was in an interview with Radio National, was that the reason that you and Senator Pocock had put forward those items for those bills was that they were the only things that the opposition would agree to. So what that means, Senator Lambie, and thank you for informing the Australian public, is that the opposition would not support provisions to deal with wage theft, to deal with industrial manslaughter, to deal with labour hire workers getting ripped off, to deal with delivery drivers getting bad safety. So it's an absolute
Thank
disgrace
you, Minister
that the opposition
Watt, the time
wrote
for
back
answering
those matters.
Has expired. Senator Lambie, first supplementary.
Instead of passing these bills, their own changes to law, the government is choosing to lump them into very complex and very contentious legislation. Laws that go to changes to casual employees, the gig economy and the right of entry for union delegates, all this in an economy that is tanking. Minister, do you recognise that by passing the four bills, the Senate crossbench was helping the government to do its job, that is to make legislation better, something this government struggled to do all last week?
Thank you, Senator Lambie. Minister Watt.
Well, Senator Lambie, I guess we have to respectfully disagree with you on this, and I respectfully disagree that removing provisions from legislation or leaving them out that deal with and make it a criminal offence for employers to deliberately steal wages from their employees, I don't think that's making legislation better. I don't think that removing provisions or not including provisions that hold employers responsible for their negligence, which leads to the death of workers at work sites, I don't think that's making legislation better. I don't think that's helping the government, and I don't think it's helping workers either. And Senator Lambie, I don't think there is anything complex about making it a criminal offence for employers to deliberately steal wages from their workers. If a worker steals from their employers, they are rightfully charged with theft. But the law that, as it stands in Australia at the moment, means that an employer can deliberately steal wages from their employee with no criminal punishment at all. I don't think that's a complex matter.
Senator Lambie, second supplementary.
In the Closing Loopholes Bill, right of entry for unions is set to begin on the 1st of January 2024 in 6 weeks. The rest of the changes are due to start no earlier than the 1st of July next year. Why does this government think it is more important to give unions right of entry before granting first responders ease of access to PTSD, stopping discrimination in the workplace for victims of family and domestic violence, and bringing silica into line with asbestos, not to mention manslaughter charges, and making redundancy payments available to workers of large businesses that have shrunk?
Senator Lambie, your time has expired. Minister Watt.
Well, Senator Lambie, again, I have to respectfully disagree with you.
Senator
and
Lambie.
The result of your decision,
Senator
along with
McKenzie.
Senator Pocock's last week, to cherry-pick aspects of this legislation means that none of those matters will
Senator
be dealt with.
Senator O'Sullivan.
They could have been legislated this year in combination with all of the other matters that the government put forward in our legislation, like criminalising wage theft, like doing something about industrial manslaughter, like
Senator
protecting
Lambie.
Delivery drivers and other gig workers when they're at work,
and
like
Senator
supporting
McKenzie.
The rights of casual workers. And I dare say, Senator Lambie, there's a few of those kind of workers up in the northwest of Tasmania. I certainly know Senator Urquhart has been standing up for those workers, people who are getting ripped off at work. And unfortunately, with the approach that was taken by the
Senator
crossbench
McKenzie.
Last week, those rights are not going to be observed anymore. These issues could have been dealt with this year. In totality, we could have done all of the things that were included in your bills, along with protect workers from all those other rorts. Unfortunately, you teamed up with the coalition and now none of it will happen.
Thank you, Minister. Order across the chamber. Senator Davey. Order. Order. Senator McKenzie. I've called you about four times today. When I call you, I expect silence, and the same goes to you, Senator Lambie. I called you to order and you continue to shout out. Both of you were being disrespectful. Senator Billick.
Thank you. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Housing and Minister for Homelessness, Senator Gallagher. The Albanese government is delivering on its wide-reaching housing agenda. We've seen reporting today on the impact the decade of little action from those opposites is now having on Australian renters. Is the Minister able to provide an update to the Senate on what the Albanese government is doing to improve the experience of renting a home in Australia?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Billick for the question and for the work that she does in Tasmania in supporting access to housing and campaigning for a better deal for Australians in access to the supply of social and affordable housing, and also for those who are renting. While states have responsibility over tenancy laws, the Albanese government is showing national leadership, working with state, territory and local governments to deliver better housing outcomes. We were elected with an ambitious housing agenda to ensure more Australians have a safe and affordable place to call home, and part of that agenda includes the steps we're taking to strengthen renters' rights. We're delivering changes to make a real difference to the almost one-third of Australian householders who rent. In August, National Cabinet agreed on a better deal for renters, and states are now working on improving rental regulations in their areas, with nine agreed actions they are progressing to improve conditions for renters, including changes like developing a nationally consistent policy to implement a requirement for genuine, reasonable grounds for eviction, making rental applications easier and protecting better protecting renters' personal information, and improving protections for tenants experiencing domestic or family violence. We're also providing the 1 million households who receive Commonwealth rent assistance with improved support by increasing the maximum rate of this payment by 15% in the last budget. This is the biggest increase in CRA in over 30 years. In the budget, there were also announcements to encourage the delivery of new build-to-rent homes with some changes to tax arrangements, alongside our significant investments to increase the supply of new social and affordable rental homes. These measures together, all combined, will make a real difference to the lives of renters right across Australia.
Senator Billick, first supplementary.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister, for that answer. It's encouraging to hear that the Albanese government is showing national leadership in strengthening renters' rights. Can you provide more information to the Senate on the work the government is doing to deliver on its ambitious housing reform to improve the supply of more affordable rental housing for Australians?
Thank you, Senator Billick. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Billick for the question. I also want to take the opportunity to acknowledge the work of Minister Collins in this area, who has been working tirelessly over the last 18 months, fellow Tasmanian, to deliver on this reform agenda. With every step of our agenda, we're improving access to safe and affordable homes for Australians. To name just a few measures, they are the $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund, the $2 billion Social Housing Accelerator, the $2 billion in additional financing for community housing providers, and the $1.7 billion one-year extension to the National Housing and Homelessness Agreement. We're also seeing homes under construction thanks to the $575 million we've unlocked from the National Housing Infrastructure Facility, and we've recently committed a further $1 billion to this facility to deliver even more homes.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Billick, second supplement.
Thank you, President. And thank you, Minister, for providing more information. As the duty senator for Minister Collins, I'm very aware of how much work she's put into it. In addition to boosting the supply of housing and supporting protections for those who are renting a home, what is the Albanese government doing to support more Australians to move into home ownership?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, and I thank Senator Billick for the question. So, since the election, the government has now helped more than 73,000 Australians into their first home, including more than 10,000 Australians in regional Australia through the Regional First Home Buyer Guarantee. We introduced the Regional Guarantee in October last year, 3 months ahead of schedule, and made significant expansions to the wider Home Guarantee scheme just a few months later. And these changes have proven to be a success. We've made the scheme better for young people. We've made the scheme better for key workers like teachers, nurses and social workers. We've got a very ambitious housing reform agenda delivering for Australians. We recognise that this is an area of significant challenge. We recognise it's been an area that has suffered under a decade of dysfunction and being ignored by the former government. And in the last 18 months, we've outlined and are implementing and delivering for Australians a very comprehensive housing reform agenda that's focused on the increasing supply across the country.
Thank you, Minister. Senator McGrath.
Order.
Order.
Thank you.
Senator.
Order.
Right.
Here we go.
Order on my left.
It's going to be a cracker.
Senator McGrath.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. As has been pointed out several times in this chamber, new analysis of OECD data reveals Australians have experienced a greater collapse in living standards than any other advanced economy, with inflation-adjusted disposable incomes falling 5.1% to June 2023. Why is it that the governments of the United Kingdom, France, Denmark, Poland, the United States of America, Spain, Chile, Belgium, Finland and Hungary have been all able to deliver real growth to household disposable incomes last year, while the Albanese Labor government has inflicted the sharpest decline in household incomes of any advanced economy.
Thank you, Senator McGrath. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. And I thank Senator McGrath for the question. And my answer will be the answer that I've been given consistently in this chamber around
Senator Cash.
Around the plan that this government has to support households who are doing it tough because of the inflation challenge, because of the inflation challenge that we inherited from those opposite. That's right, I know.
Minister, please. I have called you to order. I should not have to keep repeating myself. The minister has the right to be heard in silence. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much. The inflation challenge that we inherited from those opposite, where I know you don't like it, but the single biggest quarter of inflation growth was your
Senator
final
order.
Quarter in government.
Order.
That is when interest rates had to start going up to deal with it, because
order on my left. Minister, please continue.
Thank you. Because we inherited. The facts don't lie. And so our plan has been to deliver.
Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Birmingham was on his feet. Senator Birmingham?
Point of order. On direct relevance, because yes. Senator McGrath's question goes to the 12 months to June this year, which is the OECD data. Senator Gallagher is trying to rely on the quarter before that.
Senator Birmingham.
Not even the 12 months of her government.
Senator Birmingham, you are well aware that is a debating point, Minister Wong.
Thank you. I'm on a separate point of order, Chair.
Thank you.
I will just make the point that you have called for order quite a number of times and the opposition is completely ignoring it.
Order.
As they are now. Well, I'm just making the point. We understand that at times this can be a robust chamber, but this is a repeated disregard for your rulings or your exhortation to have the minister be heard. And I'd ask the opposition to allow the minister to at least answer the question.
Thank you, Senator Wong. And I will remind people that the senator has the right to be heard in silence. Minister Gallagher, please.
Thank you. Because as Senator McGrath knows, because context is important here, the growth in decline in household living standards occurred in its most sharpest form in the final
Senator
quarter
McGrath.
Of the former government when inflation was at its peak. So that context is important, as is the fact that in the countries nominated by Senator McGrath, inflation had peaked earlier than it did. It rose earlier and it peaked
Order.
Earlier. Well, again.
Minister,
again.
Please resume your seat. Order. Order. Just a moment. Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Cash, I just called the chamber to order, and the minute the minister got to her feet, you started interjecting again. So when I call the Senate to order, it does include you, Senator Cash. Minister.
Thank you. And in many of those countries, inflation peaked higher than it did in Australia, but it certainly peaked earlier. And so it would make sense that our return to get inflation back to a target range will be later than those other countries. However, so the facts, they're the facts. It doesn't change our plan. Cost of living relief, getting the budget in better shape and making investments in the productive capacity of the economy.
Thank you, Minister. Senator McGrath, first supplementary. Senator Watt.
Minister, you stated yesterday, and I quote, "The inflation challenge is the biggest challenge that we are focusing on in the economy. It's staying higher than we would like for longer than we would like." End of quote. Is inflation today higher than you planned for when you delivered the budget in May?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, I don't have the
budget. I don't have them within the minute that it would take to retrieve, but I do note that the RBA, in their statement on monetary policy, have updated their forecasts. It is largely in line. In my recollection, it's largely in line with the Treasury forecast as at budget time.
Senator Hume, that is
what the Treasurer has advised the community. If there is anything further, I will update. But it is staying higher than we would like for longer than we'd like. I don't think anyone has made any pretense about that. And so the job we have to do is roll out the cost of living, not get distracted by the shouts of irrelevance over there. The shouting irrelevance that you have become, but to stay focused on what we need to do, which is roll out cost of living relief, get the budget in better shape, and make those investments in clean energy, skills, and housing. And that is what we are focused upon.
Thank you. Senator McGrath, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. If inflation is staying higher than you would like, for longer than you would like, in excess of your budget plans or forecasts, what new plans or actions is the Albanese government taking to stop the freefall in Australian household incomes?
Good question.
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, as I've said, it remains largely in line with Treasury forecasts. That, as I have advised in my previous answer,
Order. Minister, please continue.
So what we are doing is rolling out our cost of living relief, most of which you opposed, getting the budget in better shape, again, fixing the mess that we inherited from you in finding real savings and banking revenue, delivering a surplus. Remember, you printed the mugs. We actually delivered one. You had the mugs back in black that had to get secretly put to one side and hushed and put away very quickly. We actually delivered the first surplus in 15 years. These are all things that material help put downward pressure on inflation. And as the ABS data showed last month, our measures that you voted against actually took 0.5% off CPI for that quarter.
Senator McGrath, that is
what we are doing. We are working in line with the bank to get inflation back towards its target rate.
Senator Wong.
I ask that further questions be placed on notice.